Welcome to the Highland Good Food Podcast. It's Fuggo King here. This episode is setting about to demystify some terminology around the Scotland Good Food Nation plan. So, as you can imagine, it is at planning stage. I'm going to be talking to people who know a good deal more about this than I do. There's a consultation period that's already underway. Everyone can feed into this. It doesn't end till the 22nd of April, so plenty of time. And there are links with the podcast so that you can go and find out more how to be involved. It's been a beautiful sunny morning. I'm chatting with Ariane Burgess, who is MSP for the Highland and Island region, huge region, obviously very appropriate for Highland Good Food podcasts. And we're going to chat about all things food related to political things that are happening at the moment in Scotland. So thanks, Ariane, for joining me. And maybe I could start off just with a question about the Good Food Nation, or what people might not have come across this phrase. It's going to be something more than a phrase. It's going to be something that's going through a parliamentary process at the moment. And how would you describe it?
Thanks for that question. And it is great that we can share the idea of a Good Food Nation Scotland with more people. What I would say is possibly what a Good Food Nation, what we aspire to, those in the Highland Good Food Partnership and in Nourish Scotland, for example, the kind of Good Food Nation and myself aspire to, and what the Good Food Nation Act is going to do, may be slightly different things. But the Good Food Nation Act, which did come in last year, will get us moving in the right direction. And what's exciting now is recently, the Good Food Nation plan, which was required by the Scottish Government to deliver, the Act made them have to write the plan, gives us some guidelines. And the next step will be that councils will now have to come forward with their own Good Food Nation plan at a local level, so describing what they're going to be doing. So the reason I say that a Good Food Nation Act and plan is maybe different from what we could imagine at the best possible way of people living in a Good Food Nation is because the Good Food Nation Act and the plan is quite narrowly described. When the whole idea was brought forward by the likes of Highland Good Food Partnership and Nourish Scotland and the Scottish Food Coalition, it was a very big, broad, fantastic, holistic, systemic view of food. And it really understood that if we get food right in Scotland, it would have a massive intervention in so many areas, our health, our farming, our land use. So many things would have been brought into play, and we would have people living healthier, more vibrant lives. We would have a national health system that could really focus on people who have long-term illness, because we're actually taking care of our health in a preventative way through the food, and that we're being nourished by the food, ideally, that's grown at the most local, close to where we live. So the Act, what that gives us is that it requires the national government and local authorities to come forward a plan with how they are going to procure the food and what kind of food they're going to serve in what are called public kitchens. And I remember when I first came across that term, when I wasn't so engaged politically, and then I, you know, got involved. It's like, public kitchens, what the heck does that mean? So public kitchens are basically the kitchens that are in schools, hospitals, anywhere that provides a public service where people would be eating a meal. So schools, hospitals, prisons would be examples of that. So the good food, the local level plans will have local authorities thinking well about how are they going to get the food in the kitchen? What is that food? What's going to be on the menu? And I think the experience as well, I'd hope they were thinking about the experience of the person eating that food. And bottom line, what we're looking for is food that arrives on people's plates that is nutritious, helps us tackle the climate and the nature emergency. So it's food that's been grown in a nature-friendly way and has that awareness of the fact that we've got a commitment to meet climate targets and move to net zero. So that's what it is. And it is exciting because it's going to give local authorities a direction of travel in thinking of that. And also, my hope for it is that it will put in place the demand from local authorities to local growers, and it has the potential to give a clear income stream to the likes of market gardeners and what I would call micro growers who are growing fruit and veg. And I see them across the region doing incredibly important work and really struggling. So I'm excited about the potential for the Good Food Nation work in that way too.
It's very difficult to put these things succinctly into a few words. So I guess my next question then is, who's paying for this? How does this get paid for? Is it the councils, the government? How are we going to pay for it?
Councils already have a budget to procure food that arrives on the plates of people in schools or hospitals. So it will be a matter of thinking well about how do they use that budget and procure food more locally. So the money is there. It's about being thoughtful about how we use it. I'm aware that there are some initiatives already that support councils to look at bringing organic into the kitchen and that kind of thing. And I am aware that some councils have had to step back from doing that because of the cost of the organic piece. But I think there are ways to grow good food in such a way that doesn't necessarily have to have the organic credentials on it. It's still nutritious. It's still locally grown.
I mean, that makes sense that there's already a budget and it can be tweaked, maneuvered, however it needs to be. So then I would like to ask you about the Scottish Agricultural Bill, which to my mind, or my understanding, I guess, is something that's coming from a different angle, but for a very similar purpose. So how does the Scottish Agricultural Bill tie in with more local food, more land available for growing? It's also about biodiversity and regenerative farming. There are a lot of possible areas we could discuss here, but can you tie it in with the Good Food Nation in some way?
Before I get into the agricultural bill, just to be clear, so the Good Food Nation bill was a bill and it became an act. And the act then brought about the plan for the national government. And then that plan has now landed, and that means it's kind of time for the local authorities to do their bit. The agricultural and rural communities piece is still a bill. It's what's called stage three in the parliament. So my committee, the Rural Affairs and Islands Committee, we're in the process of doing our stage three scrutiny of the bill, and then we will write a report to parliament that will then make a recommendation as to whether we think the parliament should support the principles of the bill. So just a little bit of parliamentary process.
That's fine.
So I call it ARC. I love that. So I think we need some ARCs at the moment with climate change and things like that. So Agriculture Rural Communities Bill. So ARC is what's called a framework bill. And the main purpose of ARC is actually to replace the European legislation that was in place around support payments for farmers and crofters. And so really this framework means it's really giving powers to ministers to then do secondary legislation, which will give us the substance of the things that we need to be doing. And the government and others, myself included, are keen to see that be a framework bill because we are in a very volatile, dynamic situation in terms of climate change and what's happening to nature. So if we set things in stone in primary legislation and said it must be A, B, C, and D, and then we discover a few years down the line, oh, actually, climate change has happened. We need to make some rapid changes. It takes more time to go back and change an act, primary legislation, but secondary legislation can come through more quickly. Now, some people are a bit concerned about that because secondary legislation gets less scrutiny. So it's easier to kind of move things through and not have Parliament scrutinize it. So in terms of actually getting more local food on the ground, that's not necessarily the case, although I am really heartened because there's some very good things mentioned in the bill. So what I'm working on is how do we support those fruit and veg growers? There's so many people I meet in my region and across other parts of Scotland who really want locally grown food. And I meet so many growers who want to do that and who are doing it, but who struggle. I mean, just heard recently of a really awesome supplier of veggie box scheme who has decided to stop because of the pressures of inflation on one end. So for all the kind of inputs, and people not wanting to pay so much, so cost of living on the other. So they've decided to stop production for this year. And, you know, once you stop production for 1 year, maybe you stop forever. So what I'm doing is I'm working behind the scenes, talking to the Scottish government, and what I'm asking for is that there is some form of support payments for small-scale market garden growers. Under the Common Agricultural Policy and the current framework of payments, you have to have 3 hectares or more to get any kind of government support. So what I'm saying to the government is we've got to get away from that and actually support these smaller growers who can get more veg and fruit on our tables at a more local level. And they can also feed into the Good Food Nation in terms of local procurement. We're going to need, I believe, lots and lots of these growers growing across the nation, supplying the fruit and veg. And we had it. I was just reading recently, you know, around the First and Second World War, we used to have market gardens all over the place, all over the country. And that's what we need to be bringing back. If we're really going to meet that kind of get enough veg and fruit a day kind of measure that we're being asked to do, we need to do that. And I think also if we're going to move towards eating less meat on our plate, that's something that we're being asked to do by the UK Climate Committee, then we need to get a better relationship with vegetables, I think. We need to start loving our veg more, and it needs to be more available.
Yeah, I've got just a small piece that I was reading in a magazine, you know, where campaigners are looking for maybe something like a small producers pilot fund, which would support exactly what you're talking about, smaller scale local producers and developing supply chains as well, sharing knowledge, training, you know, bringing people in to gain access to the land, because that's a whole other topic that we probably don't have time to get into terribly well. But there are people with knowledge, people with enthusiasm, wanting to link up some of these ideas.
Well, so I'm working with the Land Workers Alliance and Nourish Scotland. So I it was brewing in me because before I got elected, I was growing food and I was also in my area noticing that people were trying to start market gardens and that kind of thing. And I knew there was demand in the area I live in. So people wanted it and people were wanting to grow it. And it kept trying to happen and it would happen for a number of years. And then the growers would struggle and it would fall away. And I just felt I need to use my role as an MSP to find a way to actually get this to happen and stay in place because there, you know, people do want it. So I had these ideas and I found that Nourish Scotland and the Land Workers Alliance also had those ideas. So we've kind of joined together and that's what we're working on at the moment. Now I'm talking to the government, the Agricultural Directorate, the Cabinet Secretary, Mary Goujon, about the need to actually really support small scale fruit and veg growers. Because we're going to need that going forward. We're going to do an event outside Parliament. They're going to bring soup and we're going to feed other MSPs soup. And hopefully, we'll maybe get some of the government folks outside as well and just kind of make a bit of noise about how great vegetables are.
So yeah, I'm wanting to going back to the Good Food Nation and the fact you've helped me understand a bit more what the differences are, different types of processes that are going on. But what I do know is that there's going to be, or there is already, a 12-week consultation process that's may have started. I'm not entirely clear on that, but I think it will be finished sometime in April. Anybody can put into this consultation process what they are interested in, what they feel is important. I know that the system is looking for a lot of input, but I know what the Highland Good Food Partnership is hoping to do as well is generate interest and discussion around this before people rush to put in ideas so that perhaps small communities will start talking about this. So I just wondered if you have any thoughts in particular about how people can get involved in this consultation process.
Yeah, so here's another little piece of the puzzle. So this consultation is the Scottish Government consulting on a piece of the Community Empowerment Act 2015, and it's actually the local food strategy. So the name of this consultation is Local Food for Everyone, Our Journey, and that opened on the 31st of January. So that whole local food strategy piece arises out of the Community Empowerment Act that became an act in 2015. And there was a piece in that act which was requiring a local food strategy, and again, councils creating their own local food strategies. And this, I think, is now the point where the government has to do a refresh. Usually acts will say, you've got to come up with a plan. The plan lasts a number of years, and then you've got to do a refresh of the plan. The Good Food Nation plan and the local food strategy, the distinction is that the Good Food Nation plan or the Good Food Nation Act was all about local authorities and public procurement and public kitchens and feeding people through public kitchens. And the local food strategy, that is all about creating growing places for communities and communities kind of taking the lead in a way. Or that's how it has been up until now. So part of a local food strategy is that local authorities need to provide growing spaces for communities. I've always thought this is very confusing, and we need to start actually bringing the two things show up together so that people understand that they're two different things. They're all about food, but they have different kind of legal processes. In terms of how people can engage, the government is working really hard, as is the parliament, with all our consultations to make them much more accessible for people. They used to be really onerous and difficult or too technical and that kind of thing. But one thing I do know is if you go onto a consultation, you don't have to answer all the questions. So if you find a question that you feel passionate about and you know a lot about, or even you don't necessarily know a lot about, but you have a sense about it and you want to make a comment about it, put it in. But don't feel you have to go through every single piece. The other thing I think would be good around responding to consultation is get some pals together. Reach out to other people who are interested in the thing and do it together, because that will make it more fun. Definitely don't engage with a consultation at like 10 o'clock at night when you're feeling a bit tired, or midnight or whatever. I have done that and it's like, no, don't do that. But so yeah, I think get some people together. The other thing is I've got a few episodes on my podcast that are not necessarily specifically about the local food strategy or the Good Food Nation, but there's some there where I do talk about food. I've got some ones about farming. So if people want to get some inspiration, I've got four on farming that took place in January 2023. I've got two on food. I think those came out in November 2023. And I'm actually about to release a couple on regenerative agriculture in the next couple of weeks. So yeah, kind of finding the resources. I'm sure there's things that Highland Good Food Partnership puts out there as well. So helping people to think around the ideas of what we're looking for. Some of the consultation is about making land available for growing. And that was, as I said, the piece that was in the Community Empowerment Act. And it is a bigger question that local authorities will need to look around. They are actually required to look around and see what they've got and what they can make available for people. And what I would say is that more people need to understand that that power is available to say to local authority, we want growing space, we want in particular allotments, and the local authority is actually supposed to deliver on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you've rightly just drawn a little bit of a line between some of the different things that are going on. So that's helpful. Thank you. Yeah, I'm lucky that I can get VegBox delivery where I am, but I appreciate this is still really a niche market. It's a tricky one.
You've got a really good point about it being a niche market. And that's one of my concerns. I kind of talk passionately about the need for locally grown food, but then it costs more. And in a way, you said earlier, who pays for that in terms of the Good Food Nation and the local procurement, but who pays for it as an individual? And how do we actually get that good food on the plates of most vulnerable people in society that could benefit from eating a really healthy plate of food? So that is something that I am working on. And I think there are some ways to do it. So the Town Centre Partnership, they have a project in Scotland. It's called Scotland Loves Local. And basically, it's a card, like a bus pass travel card or something like that. But it's a digital card that money can go on it. And you can buy a card and put 10 quid or 20 quid or 50 quid on it. And this is all about keeping money local for the local authorities. So that card can only be spent at retailers in a local authority. So it's about trying to keep the wealth within a local authority. So I thought, well, if the technology exists to be able to do that, surely we could do something where people could get a card with money on it that can only be spent with a farmer local producers that are part of a scheme. So people get money in their pocket, but they can't go and spend it at a supermarket. They can spend it at places that are locally growing food locally. So we create some kind of network. I don't know if there's legal issues around that. That is kind of very early days in thinking about it. But I do know that that was actually something that was done in New York City, with food being grown in community gardens and people on benefits being able to use a card and buy food from the local food being grown, urban food being grown in the community garden. So I think if it works there, we can surely find a way to do it in Scotland.
Absolutely. So before I finish off, I'm just going to give you an opportunity if there's any one thing that perhaps you've thought, ah, oh, this is really the key for me. This is my passionate. I mean, you've already shared some of that, I think. But if you want to add anything else that you've gone, yes, this is what I love about food or about my work with people growing food.
Well, I do feel like the horticulture fruit and veg piece is my passion. And I would say that what we need, though, is, and we're a bit up against it when people shop in supermarkets and they're getting the 2 for 1. And really, you walk into a supermarket, and yes, they try to do well by putting the fruit and veg up front. But then an awful lot of what's left in the shop, a massive shop, is full of sugar and just full of things that are really not good for us. So a big piece of the work that we need to do is support each other in getting better about what we eat, what we put in our bodies. And so I do have a lot of hope for if we can give really good, nutritious meals in schools, then young people grow up having an experience of what is a yummy, delicious meal. One thing that comes to mind is a documentary made by Michael Moro, which was called Where Shall We Invade Next? And it was all about going around Europe and pulling out the good ideas, like we should invade different countries in Europe. This is the US should invade different countries in Europe to get the good ideas. Like in Italy, they have 8 weeks holiday or something like that, whereas in the States, most people in a job get 2 weeks holiday. But he went to France to a primary school, and there's this fantastic image of him sitting in a tiny little chair. He's quite a big guy, surrounded by these kids in their chairs, having lunch. And they're like eating this, like you can imagine, like a fantastic high quality French lunch. I think it's three courses, really beautiful, delicious menu. And at some point, he pulls out a can of fizzy soda. I'm not saying the brand, but he pulls out a can of fizzy sweet soda and he puts it on the table and he says, "Don't you want that?" And they were like, they kind of scowled or were like, "What is that?" You know, like they'd never seen it before. So it is about the experience that we can give young people, an experience of delicious, yummy, healthy food that is not just meat. It's not meat and two veg, but you know, you can have incredible meals with vegetables and a little bit of meat, or vegetables and no meat. You know, I think we've got some way to go there, but the Good Food Nation Act and the plans and the local food strategy, those two pieces are like two sides of the walnut that can work really well together to get us moving in the right direction. I mean, it's not the end of the story, but we're definitely moving in the right direction.
Thanks to Ariane. It's great to feel that level of enthusiasm still within a political system that can be feel a bit mind-boggling at times. So I'm going to go on and chat to someone who's got a different perspective next, and we'll hear a bit more about how things are going down on the ground in some of the councils and a different perspective. Yeah, so thanks, Marley, first for agreeing to have a chat. I know you've got a lot going on. You're doing an MSc and you also work with Argyll and Bute Council. It's really good to just find out a bit more, I suppose, about what's happening within the council. Perhaps I could start by asking you what your role is within Argyll and Bute Council. That would be a helpful starting point.
Yes, well, firstly, thank you for asking me to come on today. A great honour. I've been with the council for just over a year now. My title is Project Lead for Food Policy and Delivery, which covers a whole range of different tendrils. I sit within the Catering and Commercial Services team, which is the question I always get asked by different people working in the sector. And it's really interesting comparing the makeup of different councils and seeing what other people who are in a slightly similar role, or at least have a similar-ish remit, which departments they sit in. So always now start leading with the fact that I sit within the catering and commercial services team, which is brilliant, such a lovely team. And yeah, it's been a great opportunity. I was brought on primarily to do some work around the council's food strategy, and also to try and get the council slightly ahead of the game with all things Good Food Nation related. There was also a project around mapping, which was originally looking at dynamic procurement and is now looking at a little bit more of local procurement, which is coming to not quite a close, but I'm hoping in the next few weeks to have some output of that work to share, which is really exciting. And have also been involved with trying to set up a sustainable food partnership, like the Highland Good Food Partnership, which has been slow progress, but I think, you know, every conversation is a step in the right direction, and we shall see.
Great. Oh, thanks. You've got a lot going on there. And yes, you mentioned Good Food Nation, food strategy, which are the things that led me into doing this particular podcast. In particular, I was interested as to how that's going within the council, because as you say, they're trying to get ahead of the game, what's going to be required at some point. So how is that going within the council? How are they finding putting in place some of the local food strategy and procurement? You know, at the council area is a big, very diverse area as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. I think after Highland, it's the second or third largest geographical area. I think the third sparsely populated. So it's a really unique set of circumstances to work with. In terms of where we are as the Good Food Nation response, still very much feels like we're at the beginning of the journey. As I think is the case within a lot of public sector, there's still quite structured work streams. So I prefer to be in a place where I was having open communication with all the different departments. I knew exactly who was doing what their role is, how I can bring them in, which question to ask them in the consultations, but I don't feel like I'm quite there yet. So the conversations are being had. I know the department leads are aware of the work that's going on, but we've obviously been sitting on the plan from the government for quite a few months now. And when I was first knocking on the door saying, hello, I'm here, I'm interested in working on this work, mostly the answer I got was, to be honest, until we've seen the piece of paper, there's not really much we can do. So it's been sit tight for the last 6 months or so until that has come out, which it now has come out, which is brilliantly exciting. So role at the moment is, as I said, to go knocking on those doors again, to try and bring people back to the conversation. A big theme of the draft Good Food Nation plan that we've seen in the last few weeks is to try and combat those siloed approaches that occur across all different departments in the public sector. So I'm hoping that we can emulate that within the Argyll and Bute Council and use this as an opportunity to bring in different departments and highlight the importance of food and how it is such a common thread along so much of the work that is going on. So that's where we're at the moment. And I'm hoping that this national plan that's been published will not only be an opportunity to feed into the consultation and can ensure as many people's voices are heard as possible, but to also wake people up a little bit, both within the council and outside the council, to the work that's to come. Because once the national plan is published, the clock starts ticking on the local plans that need to be written. And I believe they need to be written within 1 year of the national plan being published, which in local authority speak is no time at all, and it's going to come absolutely rushing around. So Argyll and Bute Council are in good stead in that, as I mentioned when I joined, they'd written the local food strategy, which at the moment hasn't gone anywhere outwardly because we've been waiting to see what's going to happen with the national plans and ensuring we've got the resources in place to actually implement upon it, which I think is the biggest question mark around all of this work. It's brilliantly exciting. It's so wonderful that it's been enshrined into law and that action will have to be taken. But at the end of every conversation comes the question of funding and resources. And that's still not something we have clarity on.
Yeah, this all sounds very familiar. Perhaps for people who don't know what is going to be involved. So, for example, I'm aware that obviously schools and the NHS within each area provide food. So how will these laws impact on how those bodies are going to get their food?
Well, I am by no means an expert, but my understanding is that the Good Food Nation Act that was passed in July 2022 was what's called the Framework Act. So it's sort of the sounding board for what's to come. So it's not quite clear yet what levers are going to be put into place, what potential new policies would be implemented or old policies strongly more enforced. Obviously, the draft plan does lay out ideas, but I think it's very much wanting to be a collaborative and iterative process. But in terms of what we do know is that once the draft plan is written, the local authorities and health boards then have to write their own local Good Food Nation plan. In Argyll and Bute, the council has the, not necessarily control, but the oversight of schools and care homes and a few other council-owned premises that serve food. So those are the ones which will be most directly influenced by the work that is to come. And then, to my knowledge, the health boards are in charge of hospital settings. So a big question mark that I have around this at the moment is how to work more closely in partnership with the health boards to ensure an aligned response. As I said, it's not quite clear exactly what the levers that will be put into place are going to be, but how can we make it so that when more deeper questions are asked, how can we make sure there is an alignment and where it makes sense to work together, we can work together, or where it doesn't make sense to work together, we can at least know what the other body is working on. And I think Argyll and Bute and Highland Council are in an interesting situation because we're both covered by NHS Highland. So have been having conversations with people in each, but not yet at a point where it feels like we all have complete clarity on what's going on and how to move forward and things. So as of yet, not sure how it's going to look like for individuals in schools or specific publicly organized food settings, but hopefully there'll be alignment towards this vision of a good food nation.
This morning, before I started talking with you, I did bring up a map of Argyll and Bute and had a look because I needed to refresh in my mind. And I thought, oh, wow, yeah, Mull, Jura, all the peninsulas across to Loch Lomond and further north. I mean, what food is grown there? What potential is there for truly localized food to feed into this? How can we see that working? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I have many thoughts and probably many, many more questions. I know that in the area, the biggest industries are whiskey and fish and seafood. Obviously, whiskey is not the industry that we'll be focused on when we're looking at schools and public sector settings, but brilliant that it is such a valuable sector for the industry. And to my knowledge, the majority of the rest of the food production is livestock rearing, but an interesting topic is the fact that a lot of the products, at least to my understanding, aren't finished in the area. So the value added as such is exported out. And then there's questions about how to keep that value in the area within the local community. And there's really interesting conversations and synergies between local food work and Good Food Nation stuff. And as I mentioned, sustainable food partnerships and community wealth building, which seems to be a big buzzword within councils and within the government at the moment, which is good. It's good to have things that are popular and people are focusing on, and it's great that it really aligns with food focused work. I think, at least from my position within the council, there's more work to be done on understanding what is out there. And that's actually what we were hoping this mapping work I was looking into might help with, at least from a council perspective, to just understand in this region more of this is being produced, in that region more of that is being produced. I'm sure people already have that knowledge as well, which again comes back to communicating and working together on this. The mapping project that I worked on, we realized very, very quickly that to get an overview of what's being produced and where is an absolutely vast piece of work and not something that we've got the capabilities of right now. So the map that we've produced has just purely got there is a primary producer there, but not down to the finer details of this primary producer is only growing crops, this primary producer is only growing meat or certain specific livestock. But I mean, it'd be brilliant if we could have that in the future, but I'm sure that would have its own issues to come with as well.
Well, that sounds very much like a food partnership tends to work with trying to meet and talk to local community groups, small producers, trying to sort of join things up. And there are people out there definitely doing that anyway, but it's how to link what the councils are going to have to do with what's already on the ground.
Definitely. And using the knowledge that already exists, there's already brilliant work going on in so many pockets of Argyll Butte. And how can the council provide a space or support a space that's been provided to increase collaborative work, hopefully?
Yeah. Yeah. And for each of us, say, living within the Highlands area, as I do, or anyone living within Argyll Butte area, there's a possibility for, well, getting more involved in your own local food producer, obviously being a food producer. But then there's also this consultation process that's happening. I think it's up until April sometime. There's a sort of 12-week period. So finding ways for people to start communicating and then feed into the consultation feels quite important. It feels, again, like I'm not someone who knows much about my local council, if I'm honest. I've never really been involved. I grow food. I know people who grow food. So yeah, it feels like there's a good opportunity. Do you have any idea how the area is going to draw more people in?
Well, I was literally writing an email before jumping on this call with you to spread the word about the webinar I'm holding at the end of the month to try and discuss this further and just say to people, this is what's going on. This is how you can feed into the consultation. Also, these are the consultation sessions, because the Scottish Government, in collaboration with Nourish Scotland, are hosting both in-person and online consultation sessions. So that will be the place to go to really get down to the nitty-gritty of it. I'm planning to just give an overview of what's going on, a bit of a background, hopefully boost engagement and attendance to those consultation sessions. In terms of feeding into the consultation, I believe it's as straightforward as looking at the consultation document online, and it's got a document at the bottom. You sort of answer the questions and then ping back the document or print it off and sign it. It's a lot to decipher. They've tried to cut it down. They've created an easy read version, which takes you through the steps a bit more, which is brilliant. But it is a lot of information and it can be hard to process. Mm-hmm. It's certainly taken me a long time to really, really wrap my head around it. But I think they're very much encouraging. You don't have to respond to every 20 questions that are in it. You can just pick out one question. As you mentioned, I'm someone that grows food. Okay, I think there's a question just directed at farmers and crofters. So you could just pick out that question, put aside a chunk of time to really give that a concise and clear and your opinion within the answer and feed that back, rather than looking at it and thinking, oh, I don't have time to do 20 questions.
Exactly. I mean, that's, that's, I'm sure, what most people feel. It is, for me, it is worth getting involved, even in a very small way, and not feel, as you say, that you have to engage with the whole thing. It's too much. You might not have time. Your MSc work is on food strategy as well. So how does that tie in for you at the moment with everything that's happening?
Yes. So I'm doing a master's in food security at the moment, which has been brilliant to do alongside this role with the council. In some ways, it's completely related. In some ways, it's completely unrelated. But for me, it's been amazing to have the opportunity to keep working alongside studying and bringing through the examples when I can. In my first year of the master's, I made one of my assignments on looking into the vulnerability of food security in Argyll Butte, which was really interesting and a great opportunity for me to just understand the landscape a little bit more. The sort of foundational pillars of food security are looking into the accessibility, availability, utilization, and stability of foods, all of which are prominent factors in Argyll Butte as well as other areas. So accessibility and availability, I think we've spoken a little bit about today, and the stabilization is the part which I personally find just fascinating for the future, and looking back to the very recent past of all the supply chain shocks we've had and all the issues it caused around food accessibility and affordability, what can we do now to make future turbulence less hugely impactful? Because there's going to be turbulence to come. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be climate events. There's probably going to be more economic events and things. And how can we get into a state where we're not all so rocked to the core by it?
Yes, I quite agree. As someone who's got the luxury of a little bit of land, you know, I'm very thankful for that. But yes, we've all been to the shop and gone, where is everything? Or why has it doubled in price? Oh, hang on. Yes, we've left the European Union. Everything comes from Spain. Right. And I remember in the early days of the Highlands and Islands Food Partnership, the conference that they held online was fascinating in that there was a group of people really keen to start up glasshouse growing for salads, for, you know, through the winter salads. In fact, there are businesses doing that in small scale. So there is a lot of potential still. How about sharing something that you particularly feel is exciting? What touches you about food and what's important to you?
Well, staying on the theme of linking to the masters I'm studying, I think the strong link between the two that I found really interesting is the importance of systems thinking and trying to ensure that when decisions are being made or actions are being taken, not just thinking about the immediate present. Who are the other players that will be affected further down the chain? What are the potential impacts, the unforeseen impacts that will come in on the future, and just really ensuring community embedded approaches, even if it's sort of got a very different focus from the beginning. I just think trying to incorporate the whole food systems in change moving forward is vitally important.
Thanks, Marley. I'm going to move on now to chat with someone from Campaign's organisation. Again, another perspective, a different way of getting involved. Yeah, so we'll see what we find out next. So it's a bit of a cold, freezy afternoon here in North Scotland, but I'm speaking with Tara White, and I know that her job... just going to read this bit because I'll get it wrong otherwise, is as Scotland Policy and Campaigns Coordinator for the Land Workers Alliance, which is an amazing organisation that I wholeheartedly support. So Tara, thanks very much for agreeing to chat. Yeah, how would you like to introduce the Land Workers Alliance for us? That would be great.
Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, so the Land Workers Alliance is a union of farmers, foresters, growers, crofters, other land-based workers who are interested in building a better food and farming system. So we do a lot of networking type things, but also quite a lot of campaigning around food sovereignty, around agroecology, and having a just and sustainable agricultural transition.
Great. Succinctly put, much better than I could have done. Yeah, so I asked you on here today because I know that you're very intricately connected with the current Scottish Agricultural Bill and what's beginning to happen in Scotland as opposed to the rest of the UK. So perhaps, again, would be great if you could just give a broad outline of where things are at the moment with the Agricultural Bill.
Yeah, so the Agricultural Bill, it's what will replace the EU agricultural payment system. So we've known it's coming since Brexit. So it's been a long time coming, this bill. And the idea is that it could transform the way we do agricultural payments in a way that will really improve our agricultural system, make our farming much more sustainable, support farmers better, you know, in a more just way. Yeah, this is a potential for that because this is the first time that we're, as Scotland, setting our own agricultural policy without EU oversight. The reality of what we're seeing at the moment is a bill that looks very similar to what we had previously. But yes, so first draft of the bill came out in the autumn. There's been various consultations on it before that, and then there was a consultation on the first draft of the bill. And the past few months, the Rural Affairs and Islands Committee at the Scottish Parliament have been taking evidence from different organisations, from farmers, from the Cabinet Secretary. So we took part in one of those evidence sessions. We gave evidence from the perspective of our members. Yeah, so I think the evidence sessions are still ongoing, and then the next stage will be the stage one debate. So it's still fairly early in the process, but we do have a draft bill that gives us a sense of where we're going.
Great, thank you. I mean, I know that there's a big wish, perhaps with the Land Workers Alliance, but also in other areas too, to really get small producers perhaps included more, feel that we can really grow more local food on small localized scales, as well as big farms. I mean, I know there's got to be a mix of things to keep our food supplies coming. So I've read about something, perhaps a small producers pilot fund. I don't know if that's something that's being looked for or hoped for. How much do you know about that?
So we've actually been very involved in the Small Producers Pilot Fund. We were on the steering group putting together that fund over the course of the past year. I think it's great that there is such a fund. but it's a very specific fund. It's a very small pot of money. I think it's likely to be £1 million the first time, and the whole agricultural budget is over 700 million. So it's a really tiny pot, and it's only for quite specific things. So it can't be used on capital expenditure, for example. It'll cover things like training or maybe a bit of supply chain development. So it's really good, and that there's something, but it's very small, and a very small amount of money compared to what other farmers and crofters are able to access. And it really isn't going to fill the gaps that are needed to support small producers. The main bulk of the agricultural payment system is done by area. So the more land you have, the more money you get, which in practice just means that those who are the wealthiest, who own the most land, who have the most assets, get the most public money.
This sounds familiar.
So that system has really disadvantaged small-scale producers. For the past few decades, it's become increasingly difficult to make a living. Not just really small scale as well, but medium scale farmers and crofters as well, because the amount of support that they're getting is just so low compared to what the large scale farms are getting. And the large scale farms don't need it as much because, you know, the economics of scale means that it is much easier for them to make a profit anyway. I think that the Small Producers Pilot Fund is great, but it doesn't address that kind of key inequality in the way that the money is divided up.
Yeah. What would you like to see done differently to change that?
I mean, in an ideal world, we'd like to see an end to the area-based payment system completely. It's really important to support income for farmers. It's really important to support sustainable practices, regenerative farming practices. So we need this agricultural support system, but it shouldn't be awarded based on how much land you have. We would advocate for a system where it was a per farmer payment instead of a per hectare payment. So all active farmers got the same amount, regardless of how much land they had. Realistically, I think it's very unlikely that we'll get something like that under this bill. There's a Scottish Government commitment to EU alignment as well that means that what we end up with will be to some extent similar to the EU Common Agricultural Policy. So what we've really been pushing for is to have a redistributive element under the bill, which basically means that the first few hectares of land that a farmer has, they would get more money on, and then that would sort of taper off above a certain size threshold. So for example, up to 30 hectares, you would get a higher payment per hectare. And above that size, you'd get a bit less. So it's still area-based, but it's weighted in such a way that small-scale and medium-scale producers don't lose out so much. Mm-hmm. And this redistributive payment is actually mandatory in the EU now. So in terms of staying in line with the EU, it would make sense for us to have something similar in our Scottish Agriculture Bill. So that's what we've really been pushing for. And we've been working with a lot of other organisations as part of the Scottish Agroecology Action Group, like the Crofting Federation, the Nature Friendly Farming Network, Propagate, a range of organisations to push for this redistributive payment that would support smaller scale.
It's good to hear that there's a whole range of people coming forward and taking active part. How can people who work the land, perhaps they haven't come across Land Workers Alliance or they're not part of the Crofting Federation, how can they get involved and have their input at this stage? Is there anything that people can actively do?
If people aren't members already of the Land Workers Alliance, I would obviously encourage them to become members. Yeah, we've got great network and loads going on. But yeah, I think at the moment, it's really important to contact politicians, particularly if you have an MSP who's in the Rural Affairs Committee, or contact the Cabinet Secretary. And I think that personal experience from farmers and land workers is really important. You know, it's kind of telling that story, explaining why it is so challenging for small and medium scale, and really outlining what support is needed and what the support could do in terms of, you know, supporting local food systems. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really good time if you're ever going to invite your MSP out to your farm or write to the Cabinet Secretary, something like that. This is a very good time to be doing it because this is when these big decisions are being made.
Yeah, and it is very much an opportunity to do that. You know, many of us might feel that they're not going to listen or, we've been here before. But unless people speak out and take a step forwards and just get a bit braver sometimes to feel that, yeah, what I think and feel and try to do is important. So, yeah, all encouragement for that. So I want to tie in a little bit with the Good Food Nation. I've been speaking with people who have been more involved with that, and I know that government and councils are going to be implementing different policies to make sure that more is done to find localized foods to support local growers. So do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it really should tie in. Obviously, agriculture and food are intricately linked. What's slightly strange is that in terms of government policy, they're not really linked at all. The teams working on food and working on agriculture don't seem to talk to each other very much. There's very little in the agriculture bill that talks about food. There's a little bit about high quality food, but nothing about local food systems or actually feeding people in Scotland. And in the Good Food Nation Act, there's very little about agriculture. They really don't connect much at all, even though they should almost be one and the same piece of policy. That disconnect is one of the main issues that we're having. I think that there's lots of scope through the Good Food Nation plans, both at the national and the regional level, to really support local food production through things like public procurement of organic local food. So there's lots of potential there, but that should link up better with what's happening in agricultural policy. I think especially because the area-based payment system that we have under the agricultural payment system doesn't really support food production. A lot of the kind of large-scale farms that are taking the majority of the money mostly produce grain, which is made into alcohol or animal feed, or they produce meat for export. But actually, the large-scale and industrial farms tend to not be feeding into our food system, and they're receiving this public subsidy, whereas smaller-scale family farming does feed into local food systems and ties in so much with the aims of the Good Food Nation Bill. So I think more connected thinking from the government around agriculture and food would be really important. We're trying to sort of make that point. Talk about food as well. It's not just about the production right up to the farm gate. It's where that goes afterwards and how that's nourishing communities.
Definitely. I mean, everyone will remember how quickly supermarkets didn't have food when there was a lockdown. So we've all seen how quickly things can change. Do you have a favourite element to all this? I mean, are you a grower? How does this affect you?
I'm a grower, but not commercially. So yeah, I grow my own fruit and vegetables. Yeah, I would absolutely love to be a grower and keep livestock and, you know, run a small scale mixed farm. This ties into some of the, you know, the other issues we have in policy in Scotland. Access to land is a real challenge. I grew up in the city. I live in Edinburgh. And so being able to access land for small scale food production is really challenging beyond allotment scale. And that's one of the issues that our members really struggle with. We have so many members who are trained growers and really want to be growing food for their communities, but actually finding the land to be able to do that is really an issue.
It absolutely is, yeah. I mean, I feel very fortunate that, well, 30 years ago, myself and my family moved to the north of Scotland. Having worked and owning a property down south, we were able to buy an old place to do up and 2 acres of land, which is now a woodland garden where we can grow lots of food. But of course, that was 30 years ago and we had a bit of money. How to address some of these things is pretty critical. And I know the Land Workers Alliance is very keen to do so. How are you finding people coming up with creative ideas? Do you know of any interesting stories there?
I think there are lots of creative ways that people are addressing this issue. And we're seeing more and more sort of partnerships between, for example, estates and people who want to start market gardens and things like that. There are always issues, the power dynamics and those relationships and things, but people are finding creative ways because it's so challenging. I think we do need some fairly major land reform for that to happen at scale. And obviously there's also a land reform bill going through Parliament at the moment. As it stands, the drafts that we're aware of, it doesn't look like it's going to be that helpful for small scale food producers or even food producers at all. The scale of land that they're talking about is so big that it's not really relevant to a kind of family farm size. But we're hoping that if we can push for more under the land reform agenda to support small scale growers, and not just growers, people who keep livestock and you just produce food at small scale more generally, and also small scale forestry projects, you know, there's a whole range of things that could be enabled by that. But at the moment, Scotland has the most concentrated land ownership in Europe. In that context, it's really difficult for people to get involved.
Yeah.
There is the kind of beginnings of a renaissance of small-scale agriculture and small-scale food production. But at the moment, it's very much despite the policy rather than because of it. The policy has not been supporting it. And some people have kind of managed against the odds. And I think being part of networks is really important. So, for example, the Crofting Federation or the Land Workers Alliance. Other networks, the Smallholders Association, where people can work together and support each other, share ideas, yeah, share knowledge, how to develop supply chains, things like that. And also to get together to put pressure on politicians. I think that networking is really important because otherwise it's pretty isolating.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, that feels like where the Highland Good Food Partnership kind of sprung out of enthusiasm for allowing some of that networking as well within this area. And that's certainly why I got involved.
I think what's great about the Highland Good Food Partnership as well is bringing together the producers with other people in the area who are interested in local food systems. That's really great as well.
Yeah, I think food partnerships on the whole, though, they're all slightly different. They have different focuses. But my understanding is that, say, the one in Aberdeen in the city still is doing exactly that, trying to bring people together over different areas of food.
Yeah, I think the other thing to say would be about there's so much talk about the need for this agricultural transition in Scotland and how we need to move towards regenerative practices, sustainable practices. But all the talk around the agriculture bill is very top down. You know, the government is going to tell people they have to do these things on this certain list. And I just think it's really important that we remember that there are so many people who are already pioneering these things. You know, we have really amazing examples at all scales in Scotland, from the very small to the very large, of amazing regenerative practices, agroecological systems. And that's, I think, where the leadership needs to come from.
Thanks to everyone who's talked with me. I'm feeling quite enthusiastic about getting a bit more involved. And if you want to, as I said earlier, there are links with the podcast where you can go to government events, which are free. They're going to do in-person and online ones. And then you can find your way to the actual consultation, which is fairly straightforward. You don't have to answer every question either. You can look for what applies to you or what you feel strongly about. And there will also be more informal get-togethers. Again, there's a link that you can follow and find out what's happening near you. Or just get together with other people who are keen and enthusiastic to see this plan coming to fruition. So, also I'd like to thank the Highland Good Food Partnership team who fund this podcast. It's recorded by me, Fugo King, edited by Rachel Butterworth, and the lovely music is by Emma and Rachel Butterworth. Okay, thanks for listening.